of the crop.
Welcome to the 88th edition of the Gooner Podcast, recorded on the Monday evening after Arsenal's home win against West Brom. This podcast is sponsored by the website for all your unofficial Arsenal t-shirt needs, goonershirts.com. I'm your host, David Udo, returning to the hot seat after the one-month hiatus, and my thanks to Mark Ollington, who kept my seat warm in my absence. So, as traditional, time to introduce the panel without further ado. He's already had one name check so far this evening, and we can't wait for him to regale us with the tale of his lift to Saturday's game in the passenger seat of an Arsenal legend. We'll keep you in suspense for a short while, but the man who enjoyed the ride was none other than our own Mr. Mark Ollington.
Hello, everyone.
Next up, a man without whom none of us would be here, or at least in this place at this time on a Monday evening in November, because he is the man responsible for the creation of the Gooner, the editor for the first 13 years of its existence, and now the big cheese calling the shots at Gooner Towers. It's caps doffed and forelocks tugged for Mr. Mike Francis.
Good evening.
And finally, he's been badgering for us to appear on the podcast, so we've given in and presented him with a chance to make podcast immortality. Let's hope he's worth the sacrifice, as we had a late call from Don Sebastiano saying he could make it. No pressure there then. It's a debut for regular Gooner contributor, both in the fanzine and online. Hello to Mr. Simon Rose.
Hello.
Now, Mark, tell us all, please, about your trip to the West Brom game on Saturday.
It was, David, let me tell you, a shocker, but brilliant at the same time. Now, to cut a very long story short, because I haven't got, you know, an hour or 2 hours for me to regale you with the whole thing, but let me say I was around a friend's house, and I ended up getting a lift to the ground via a friend of his, Mr. Nigel Winterburn,
No. The
Arsenal legend, the left back of dreams. So imagine my joy when someone said, Mark, you haven't got to get a train to today's game to London. You'll be given the lift there by Mr. Winterburn. He was doing commentary at the Emirates for, as we shouldn't really call it, for some Asian football station. So I got lifted in his motor. I was in the back, so, you know, so I was piping up every now and then with a few comments. But what was fascinating was hearing some nuggets from the great left back himself. Now, one thing he did say, have you got time for this, David?
Do you want me to? As much time as you could possibly imagine.
Fantastic. One thing he was very irked and upset about, and wanted me to pass on to the listeners of this esteemed podcast, was apparently the chairman of our esteemed football club has taken away tickets for supporters. Not supporters, sorry, from players. What am I talking about? I even had a drink. I'm on Sprite today.
If they have taken tickets away from the public, is that why we have less than 60,000 people in every week?
Indeed, they're doing some experiment whereby they're kind of... But no, apparently the legends of yesteryear have had their tickets taken away from them. And you make of that what you will, listeners out there. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Can they afford their own tickets? You tell us. But I think that message wanted us to be passed on. They no longer get their freebies. But more important than that, even though Nigel wanted that to be a concern, what I found extremely fascinating for the man himself was that when it comes to the 49 players, is it, or 50 players?
32
players around the ground. He was not one of them. So he wants to know why all the listeners out there didn't vote him to be around that stadium. So next time you're walking around, you're seeing David Seaman, you're seeing great players of yesteryear around our esteemed ground, ask yourself why you didn't vote for Nigel, because Lee Dixon is there. And who was a better footballer? I'd wager Winterburn was a better fullback myself personally.
Notwithstanding Lee Dixon's ability as a penalty taker, you do remember Nigel for outstanding goals from about 30 yards.
That one against Wimbledon.
Yeah, absolutely.
He must have just missed out. It must have been like number 33 or something.
Indeed. So let's hope he was there, because he's not very happy he's not around the stadium. But he was a lovely man, a good driver. He did get driven, you know, we drove straight to the stadium, bypassed the whole queue. The man at the door was very, very nice and said, Nigel, come in. Gave us a little car parking space straight away. So it was a lovely way to go to the game. But what made it even better than that? I've got a better story, actually. At half time, I bumped into someone even more special. Someone that has got
even more special than Nigel Winterburn.
Someone that's got an even bigger place in my heart than Mr. Winterburn. I bumped into Mr. Mike Francis at half time. What a day! Winterburn before the game. Francis at half time. It was a day made of dreams, Dave.
He remembers it so well that it wasn't even on Saturday, it was the previous game. There you go. Thanks anyway, Mike.
Oh, was it really? Yeah, did I bump into you on Saturday?
You're Adam. Before.
Jesus Christ, I'm going senile.
So, is there anything from Mark's story that makes you think things are absolutely, absolutely wonderful, or actually things are really, really terrible?
At the moment, in terms of form and things, it's picking up. I mean, I think the fact that the weekend, you know, I think a lot of fans went into the game thinking we were going to win, which is a nice mindset based on the start of the season. I felt fairly kind of confident we could win 2-0 or 3-0. The way that it just ended up being that kind of result, a fairly comfortable kind of day, it felt good. I think people have come away a bit annoyed there's like an international break now, which could affect the momentum a little bit, but I think people feel confident at least. The matches coming up are quite decent looking games. Norwich away, and Wigan away as well. There's a couple of decent home games for them coming up as well.
We don't have a difficult game between now and Christmas apart from Man City away, really.
That's it. I think until we come and get to Man City, I think it's middle of December, we've got four decent league matches. We'll know exactly where we're at in terms of the Champions League as well. I think despite the really awful, horrible start to the season, wins make you feel confident. And even though some of the wins recently have been a little bit tight, once you start to feel confident, it helps you to get confident looking results. At the moment, I think things are looking quite nice.
Mike, asking you to add, I mean, looking at recent home wins against Sunderland, Stoke, West Brom, victory at Chelsea, in the Cups we've progressed to the last eight of the Carling and are topping the Champions League group. Have we been getting all worked up about nothing?
Well, no. I mean, we haven't been getting worked up about nothing. I think society in general today, you tend to overreact to everything. So, you know, although it's hard to overreact to an 8-2 defeat, isn't it? But maybe we went a bit overboard at the beginning of the season. But I do still think that the problems that we talked about at the end at the beginning of the season are still there. It's just things are coming together. The new signings are bedding in a bit more, and we are getting results. I mean, yeah, as you say, some of them have been a bit tight, but a win's a win, and you only get 3 points whoever you're playing and however you would beat them. So goal difference at this stage I don't think is particularly something to worry about.
It might just be me, but I'm really, really bored going to watch Arsenal at the moment, because I don't think we play all that attractive. I mean, the example I'm sort of thinking of was the year when we won 5-1 at Inter Milan. The following Saturday, or the previous Saturday, we played against Fulham at home, and the man of the match by an absolute mile was their goalkeeper, Edwin van der Sar, who made something like 26 saves. No matter how much possession we have, and it may be 60, 70%, we never seem to have any shots on goal. I mean, it was the most recent Carling Cup game against Bolton. We won 2-1, but we only had two shots on goal the entire game. That's worrying. Is it, Mark?
I think it's indicative, isn't it, of us as a team at the moment, in that we haven't got the players that we once kind of had. I think the key thing is, though, for us at the moment, it's all about winning. And you're right, there's not a barrage of shots on goal. I think in the Chelsea game, we had 5 shots on goal and scored 5 goals. Mm-hmm. And luckily, the finishing was clinical. While we've got Van Persie in such brilliant form, we don't need to worry, really. He seems to have, he seems to miss one chance in a game but score 3 or 4, which is absolutely brilliant. But when you've got players of the calibre of Nasri, Fabregas, and we've mentioned that time and time again, of course you're not going to create as many chances. But, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. Jovinho started to hit a decent run of form. We're starting to whip decent crosses into the box. And Carl Jenkinson, from nowhere in the last couple of games, can seem to do a brilliant pinpoint ball into the box. And so with players like that getting better and better with every game, I've got reason, David, for cautious optimism. So yes, we're not having the shots on goal in abundance, but it might come.
And I think as well, there's plenty of games we remember where we had loads of shots on goal and didn't score once, you know, or like the Fulham game you've just mentioned, you know. Yeah. There was one in the Champions League as well, wasn't there? Was it against Porto at home a few years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Where we had something like 30-odd shots on goal and went away with 0-0 draw.
I think let's
be happy about the fact that we're taking chances, we're taking a much better percentage of chances than we perhaps were used to when we've created more chances. So, you know,
I think also,
swings and roundabouts.
In the time of that Inter Milan game, we generally played a 4-4-2. We had lots of players who, when they got the ball, would just steam down the other end of the pitch. They look to play each other in quickly, early ball, and score goals before the other team has settled. Now we have more of this kind of 4-5-1. We have one main obvious guy who's going to score, Van Persie. We don't have a democratic, sort of fully licensed team like we had then, because now you pretty much feel the likes of, say, Jovinho, and probably others in the team too who are fairly new, probably feel an onus of, I've probably got to get it to Van Persie. I've probably got to get it to someone who's maybe a bit more important than me, because if I shoot and I miss, everyone's going to go nuts. Mm. Well, in those days, okay, if Perez missed one, 2 minutes later, you know, Youngberg might have a shot, let alone Henri. Whereas now, it's all more focused on the one player up front. You know, people are worrying, well, okay, how long is Van Persie going to last without getting injured? But can we risk playing Chamakh? What's Park really about? It's all a little bit too focused on a certain type of formation. And, okay, this whole one-man team thing is partly based on Van Persie being the only striker he's most likely to score.
I think that's fair enough. I think that's a fair enough assessment. Going back to what Mark just said, he talks about Cole Jenkinson, a player who embarrassed himself at the start of the season, to be frank. I mean, his performance, well, everyone's performance at Old Trafford was a nightmare, and him being told how to defend by Theo Walcott, of all people, to which he clearly responded with the words,
"Thanks,
fuck off."
as we all would, yeah.
I mean, in fairness, since he's come back from suspension and the little injury he got, he is showing some improvement. I mean, Mike, do you think there are signs of a quality defender coming through in Jenko?
I do. I like him. And to be fair, I liked his attitude from day one. You know, he was thrown in the deep end, wasn't he, at Old Trafford? And yeah, okay, there was that one incident where he tracked his man forward and Walcott should have tracked Everett back, and he didn't. And I think they had a go at each other about it, and I'm not convinced either one of them was right. But, you know, he still gave everything. His attitude is what stands out for me. He works hard, he's up and down the pitch. It just feels like, I mean, he is an Arsenal supporter.
Yeah.
And it seems to show, and I don't know whether I'm seeing that because I know he's an Arsenal supporter or whether it's vice versa, but it's just nice that you can have a sort of affinity with a player that's in the team. And we've got a few now, whereas maybe 2-3 years ago you looked around and you went, oh, I don't know, they're all rich superstars, who's real Arsenal there? And now you just feel with Wilshire, with Jenkinson, and with Ramsey, you know, there's some players there. I mean, Vermaelen and Van Persie possibly as well come into that. They just feel a bit more Arsenal players.
It's good for Arsenal that Vermaelen and Van Persie seem to be really good friends, got a good connection there. It might not make a massive impact to Van Persie that Vermaelen signed a new contract, but it probably would help.
It's a good point. And I think I'll get Jenkins in the back of my shirt. You know, I don't get players' names in the back of my shirt, Dave. If I did, I'd get 25 Jenkinson. Because that guy, I've never seen a player try so hard for absolutely years, and it's just a brilliant story. Mm. This time last year, he was playing non-league football almost, and then a few games...
Well, he was on Charlton.
And look at now, he's now playing Champions League football, and both games against Marseille, he did brilliantly, fantastically, didn't embarrass himself at all.
You're right, the game in Marseille as well, where you're saying he really tries. I mean, there was a couple of times, he went off injured in the end.
Yeah.
But he went down a couple of times in lengthy treatment, and you just kind of went, oh God, an Arsenal player's going to get stretched off again or limps off. And he's up again and running up the wing the next minute, and eventually he sort of, you know, went, you know, I've got to give up now. There's about 5 minutes to go, you know.
But
you
that kind of honest endeavour is fantastic. You know, as you said, when he first started earlier this season, everything was so awful, and you felt really sorry that he was getting plunged into such a mess. But to me, he kind of came across when he joined like someone being a young Arsenal fan, that he was almost genuinely delighted to be getting to go to Arsenal matches and not having to pay to attend. And he's getting paid, you know, five figures presumably a week.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who's just really chuffed to be there. And his effort is really, really strong. I think the weekend, the fact he put in crosses, you know, quite near our players was up ahead of a boost, really, you know.
In the unfortunate missing of the best right back in the Premier League being Bakary Sagna, we do have to hope that Cole Jenkinson stays fit. In fact, I think the only person involved with Arsenal who thinks otherwise is probably Johan Juru, because it's the only way he's going to get a game. Staying on the back four, we've done the right back. Regards to the left back at the moment, because Kieran Gibbs has some kind of mysterious injury to his stomach, where are we thinking about Andre Santos, Mark? I mean, is it the case of the good, the bad and the ugly? Is he just going through a settling in process? Is he always likely to be a liability? Or does he really think he's a centre forward?
He's fat, isn't he?
He is fat.
And I think we've got to start there. I mean, he's not fat in the terms of the average guy down the pub. If he was walking down the street now, you wouldn't go, there's a fat bloke, would you? But in the terms of a football player, he's fat.
Too near to him anyway.
Yeah. And he's a big guy. And he huffs and puffs. he looks unfit. He's not a striker. I mean, back in the old days, Mickey Quinn could get away with doing it. The game's moved on quite a lot since then. And it baffles me how a player of such a size can play in his position. So that is strange. Mm. I'm not a great analyser of the game, as I listen to this probably know. But you know, even I can see his defensive capabilities are practically zero. I don't think he can tackle. Yeah. He never tracks back. He's woefully out of position the whole time. But yet, I kind of quite like him. I don't know why. He's like a bad woman. A woman, you know, you shouldn't fall in love. She kind of flits around, has affairs with other men, that type of stuff. And you can't, well, she's a bit ugly, but you can't quite work out why you like her. But something about her, perhaps she's a bit saucy, or lets you do things you shouldn't really kind of do. And in a way, Santos is like that. I don't know why, but he is.
I think when you're winning, a bit of crapness from a player seems kind of endearing. If we were losing these games, we were playing in the beginning.
But he has got a couple of good goals, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, someone was saying at the weekend, you know, people were feeling recently a little bit like, oh, are we missing Clichy? Don't know. But he scored as many goals in like half a dozen games as Clichy ever scored for us.
It did worry me in the Marseille home game. He did a couple of 1-2s in the inside of his own half, and he thought, you know what, I'm going to see this through to the end. And he was up front, admittedly next to you know, Ji-young Park, but at the same time you're kind of thinking, I'll be honest with you, I don't know who the first choice centre forward is in the penalty area at the moment, but it's a good job Alex Song's learnt the Gilberto Silva role of filling in at left back if someone else goes forward. Mike, where do you stand on Fatty Santos?
I tend to agree with Mark. I find him quite endearing. I don't know why. The Chelsea game helped, I suppose, or the second half of the Chelsea game helped. If you'd have asked me at half time, then I'd have said shoot him. But yeah, I mean, Brazilian fullbacks, I mean, they've always had this tendency to attack, haven't they? But because the Brazilian team has done well over the, or they've been better over the last year, few years when Dunga was in charge, they became more structured at the back. And I guess that's why he didn't get many games for Brazil, because he hasn't got a clue. He's the old style Brazilian
structure.
Fullback.
That's one way of putting it.
Plays up front.
Always be wary of some Brazilian guy and you think he's a bit shit hot. Does he play for Milan? Does he play for Barcelona? Or do you sign him from Fenerbahce? The last question I've got here about the back four is quite an interesting one from a certain point of view. I mean, in light of the fact we've signed Per Mertesacker, the 75 caps by the age of 26 German guy, Thomas Vermaelen appears to be, let's really hope and touch wood, that he's back from injury for the rest of the season. And as some people will protest, not me, Lauren Koscielny is turning into a footballer. Simon, what is now Arsene Wenger's first choice centre-back pairing?
I mean, at the weekend, Mertesacker was left out. Wenger afterwards said it's because he thought Odunwingie was going to play and is fast. I mean, slightly surprising that he was therefore essentially alluding to the fact and if you like, broadcasting to every other team we might play this season, here's a guy who can't deal with fast players.
Yeah.
Koscielny, I liked him last season. I think when you get a player who arrives from a bit of an unknown sort of area, people tend to think, oh, he probably won't be very good. But I think by and large, he did well last season. The Carling Cup final, of course, really kind of clouded people's impressions of him. But I think he's improved a lot this season. And in some way, it vindicates Wenger's belief in him in terms of signing. Because people often think that he can't, you know, sign a decent central defender. But I do wonder if with Vermaelen coming back, I think there's a good balance. Vermaelen left-footed, Koscielny right-footed. Doesn't mean they're both going to be the same, you know, both going to be right or left. You know, most defenders tend to be right-footed anyway. But I think Koscielny looks good alongside Vermaelen. One of the great things with him is that he'll step out and intercept things, which avoids the knees in a Tony Adams-like way of having to make, you know, bone-crunching challenges. So he's very, very intelligent in that way. And I think Koscielny works with him. And that, if anything, regardless of any faults that Mertesacker might have, looking a bit, you know, Stepanov's like a bit clumsy, if Koscielny works with Vermaelen and Vermaelen stays fit, I think Koscielny will be the first choice.
Mike, I think we've kind of come to the conclusion that Vermaelen, as the vice captain, is going to play every single game. It's a question of whether you have Koscielny or Mertesacker next to him. I mean, the question I have is who would you rather have? Would you rather have the 26-year-old with 75 caps for his country, or the 25-year-old who's only appeared in the French squad when every single French centre back's been injured?
I might be slightly controversial here, but I like Mertesacker. I don't know whether it's just because since he's bedded in. He had that first game at Blackburn, didn't he, which was a disaster for everyone. And I know he was responsible for two of the three goals at Chelsea as well, by ball going over his head. But he just seems to... He seems to organise the defence around him. He's vocal, he's pointing at players. And I think that's what we've missed a lot, certainly last season when Vermaelen was out. Vermaelen will do it. But to have Vermaelen next to Mertesacker, I think is a good partnership. You've got the speed of Vermaelen, but you've got the knowledge and the expertise and awareness that Mertesacker gives you. You don't get capped. I know it's a cliche now, isn't it? I don't mean guile. But, you don't get 75 caps for German and be crap. He's got to have something about him, and it's not just height.
Mark, we've had one choice of Lauren Koscielny, we've had one choice of Per Mertesacker. I mean, unless you drop Thomas Vermaelen, who's going to be your first choice centre-half?
I'll agree, in fact, actually Mike today is a bit disconcerting, because I bumped into him at the game before last. And when he came, I would have said Per Ballsacker, really, because I really did think he was, you know, absolute pile of balls, but I can see improvement in him, and I think Mike made a really good point that he does shout and he tells players where to go. And whilst he might not be able to get there himself, because he's quite slow, at least he can tell Vermaelen where to go and what position to get in. And I think Jenkinson's form, even though he had a good game and he actually wasn't playing on Saturday, but Marseille game, you looked at Mertesacker for the whole match. He was telling him where to go, where to stand, where to run. And that's what we need our centre-backs to do. So it's looking like, in all seriousness, we've got three decent centre-halves.
And that's the great thing, because if they stay fit, then you can work out from game to game which ones you want to play.
That was the key phrase, wasn't it? If they stay fit. Yeah. Here we are talking just as they go on to international duty.
Exactly. And they all come back crocs and end up playing Scalacci again. But I think if they do stay fit, we're going to be, you know, in a really good place, which is, look at what we were saying this time 3-4 months ago. And don't get me wrong, and Koscielny is still prone to errors. I mean, he hasn't made one for a while. It's probably going to happen at some point. I just hope when that does happen, we don't then just go back to saying, oh, he's crap all over again. Do you know what I mean? Because
they all make mistakes. All players make mistakes. You know, people harp back, but, you know, Adams made mistakes, particularly early on. You know, mistakes will happen. It's just whether or not you get particularly punished by them.
But don't you think, though, it's key that Tommy V stays fit? Right. Because really, he's the fulcrum. I mean, you can imagine him with Mertesacker, him with, like, Koz, but really, when he goes... I know we've done quite well up to he could come back in the last couple of games, but he's world class, I think, potentially, a world class centre back. And it's vital he now stays fit, because if he gets injured again, it's pointless.
I think we do have to grab hold of Tommy Vermaelen with both hands, if for no other reason he's been publicly named as the vice captain. So when Van Persie inevitably goes to Manchester City in the winter or summer, he's going to take over as the captain.
You're a ray of sunshine, Dave, aren't you? Flipping out.
I tell you, like this.
And I missed you last month as well, Jesus.
Well, we're going to take a short break before continuing our next podcast. But as always, just to mention that if you want to email us about anything related to the podcast, including that very, very nice review we got last week, our address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. But before we end, a quick mention for the current issue of the Gooner, currently on sale, from our esteemed editor, Mr. Kevin Witcher.
Good evening, listeners. Issue 219 of the Gooner will still be on sale for the home game against Borussia Dortmund. It features a couple of articles on Arsene Wenger, one comparing him to Hamlet and another comparing him to a villain in one of the Batman movies. But great graphics with those, I have to say. Also an article by our very own Simon Rose here, proposing a dream ticket management duo of Carlo Ancelotti and Martin Keown. Amongst many other features, £2, absolute bargain. Please buy and keep us going.
Many thanks. Cheers, Mike. With that, it's the usual thanks for our sponsors, GoonerShirts.com, and it's goodbye from Mark.
Goodbye.
Mike.
Goodbye.
And Simon.
Goodbye.
We'll be back soon with more. I'm your host, David Udo, and thank you very much for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company, way!